Well, it's been just about a year since I started this project, and I finally got to episode 10. Yay! We're halfway to my target of interviewing 20 women about how they got started in their field, what they've achieved, and the challenges that they faced along the way. I'm still hoping to hit that target this year, so let's see how we go. This episode's guest is Dr. Eva Plegani. Dr. Plegani has a PhD in applied mathematics and is a principal research scientist with the CSIRO, looking specifically at ensuring the sustainability and welfare of fisheries and their associated ecosystems. This work has taken her from the Antarctic to the tropics of the Torres Strait.
So I've always been interested in science, and I always enjoyed mathematics at school. I was pretty good at maths, but I also loved the natural sciences. And in trying to think what could I do with maths and the natural sciences, it wasn't particularly clear to me, but I knew I wanted to go to university, so I decided just to study both of those and figure it out as I went. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of from an interest in research in general, just always wanting to know more about the natural world and wanting to, you know, improve my mathematics and learn more about just about everything. So yeah, it was sort of from a curiosity, and at that stage in my life, I was mad, well, I still am mad about whales and dolphins, and I thought maybe I could do something with whales. I had quite a romantic idea about working as a researcher on a boat following whales around, which would have been lovely, but yeah, probably not the most practical way to lead a life with children and family and things. So I do still work on whales, but I found a, you know, slightly more practical way to do it. But yeah, it was basically just from a love of two areas, and then starting studying and then realizing that I could combine those quite fruitfully as I went ahead.
So for some people, the thought of doing, you know, marine biology and mathematics doesn't really mesh. How did you make them combine? How did you work them together?
Yeah, it took me a little while, to be honest, because at the time when I was interested in it, it wasn't a big thing. And when I looked around for information, it was more about things like how you could use mathematics to describe the patterns in flower petals, for example. And I was like, well, it's not all that interesting. Then when I was in my starting second year, I saw an advert from one of the lecturers at my university on a talk on modeling antelope populations, and I actually went running to his office and I was like, tell me what you do, because that's what I want to do. You're clearly using mathematical models to help with natural resource management. And so that was the start of realizing that actually these fit very well. And it was also at a time when there was this growing realization that mathematics is absolutely fundamental to a lot of the life sciences and a really strong tool, not only for the sort of things I do, which is around modeling populations to, you know, assist management, conservation, fishery science, things like that, but in almost all the fields to interpret the data, to understand and analyze. So it really is a real basis. And since that time, there's been a lot more focus on students doing more mathematics as well as statistics, computer science with the life science subjects.
So mathematics has a bit of a reputation for being slightly male dominated. How did you fit into that when you were coming through university?
Yes, it was challenging because it certainly was very male dominated when I was there. And in fact, so I first, as a young lecturer, I started lecturing quite young because, as I say, I'd done the zoology, botany, and applied mathematics. Those were my majors. And it was right when the University of Cape Town was starting a course on teaching mathematics to life science students. And so they wanted somebody who could help with the, you know, examples of where the mathematics fits in. So I started working in the maths department, and I was simultaneously in the zoology department at the time. And from there, I went on to eventually have a sort of tenured lecturer position. But I was one of two sort of permanent females on the staff out of about 30 males. Mm-hmm. And I was the only one at that stage that sort of had children as well. So there were a lot of challenges in working in the sort of very male dominated world, and it's continued actually, because although in the life sciences we have a lot of women, but a lot of the more mathematical areas like fisheries modeling have traditionally been more male dominated, and so I can often be the only woman in a room, and it is challenging, because I think what's hard, it's the subtle things to me that are hard. It's men have a slightly different way of communicating sometimes, or they can be a bit more forceful and have different ways of putting things across. And as a woman, I'm quite extrovert, so I've managed to survive. But some of my slightly quieter female colleagues have battled to sort of have their voices heard. So definitely there remain challenges. I mean, there remain challenges in women in my field being in senior positions, although we do have a lot of young women coming in now. But again, you have a lot of male men at the top, and most of them are very nice, but it can be challenging, and they don't always understand, you know, some of the subtle differences around being a woman.
So you say that in the life sciences there's a much higher percentage of women in. So does that make things easier for you?
Yes, it's, well, I guess it varies where you go, because as I say, there's some areas where it is quite male dominated, and then you go to some other of the more social science areas where it's more female dominated. Some of the field work is more male dominated. The quantitative sort of fisheries assessment areas are typically more male dominated. So I move between all of those. So nowadays I tend to move between different fora. But I do work, for example, most of my work's in the Torres Straits up in northern Australia.
That's a terrible place to work.
Oh, yes, it's really tough. Yes, I'm very fortunate to work in that area. But again, I do the assessment of the tropical rock lobster fishery together with my team. And all the fishers that I talk to are male, so it's very sort of male dominated in terms of the stakeholders that I'm working with sometimes as well. And there is a little bit of a process to sort of get the buy-in and the trust that you do know what you're talking about, because suddenly there's a woman talking about a fishery that, you know, people are experiencing every day. And that would be a bit more challenging than a male that they know more used to seeing as a role model sort of stepping in. So I guess it is a bit, it is, I think it's a bit harder being a female, but.
So what projects have you worked on in your career? I'm looking at your CV at the moment because, you know, research. And I see you've worked with Namibian hake, West Greenland beluga whales, bluefin tuna. What have you been doing with them?
Yes, so most of that's research I did quite a while back, mostly when I was based in South Africa. I've been in Australia now for 9 years, but throughout the last 20 years I've worked, as you say, internationally as well. So I have worked on a range of fisheries. I'm very fortunate. I've worked all the way from tiny plankton through to great big whales. I worked for many years on Antarctic ecosystems and was fortunate to do a long research cruise down to Antarctica. I'm now working on tropical systems like the Great Barrier Reef and Torres Straits, on the tropical lobster, the sea cucumbers. I work on the crown of thorns starfish on the Great Barrier Reef. So really a huge range of different ecosystems and different species. So most of those, it's applying quantitative mathematical modeling to the data to help inform and support the management.
So have you had any pushback from, so you say you've been working with the fisher, the people who are doing the fishing in the rock lobster fisheries, have you had any pushback or resistance to the work you do?
Actually, we've been fortunate in Torres Strait, and that CSIRO and my team that I work with have a really long history of working in that region. And so there is a lot of trust and mutual respect for the work in that region, which has been fantastic. And that relationship has changed over time, because more recently with the native title claims and greater expressions of wanting more ownership of the fishery. We've been working more closely with the fishers and with the traditional owners to try to actually take into account some of their socio-cultural considerations as well as their local knowledge, in merging that with some of the sort of state-of-the-art scientific techniques that are used around the world to try to put together the best management possible that's also adapted in a local context and has the buy-in and ownership. So it is actually a real success story up there in working closely with a community that really care about their fishery resources. And as a result, they're very open to science contributing to that and complementing, and then needing to mesh with some of their local sort of customs, and they have their own local management systems as well, which sort of complement some of the other management measures. So that one's a real success story in many ways. The fishery's doing fantastically.
Very cool. What's your favorite thing about the work that you do?
I think just that I love it. I love the natural world, so whether it's birds or whales or fish, and because I'm so passionate about it, I really want to try to make a difference to, you know, the conservation, but at the same time I care about people, so, you know, I don't want to just lock everything away and no one can have access. So I'm really passionate about us using resources sustainably, still having beautiful places to go and conserving species, but also taking care of people's livelihoods. And the scientific field that I found myself in and the opportunities at CSIRO mean that I can actually contribute to sort of moving forward in that, to helping manage some of those fisheries sustainably, and, you know, not forgetting about the people too that rely on it. So for me, it's very rewarding that you actually making a bit of a difference, and it helps that you get to travel to nice places in the Torres Straits too.
Oh yes, I'm sure it helps. I'm actually jealous of the fact that you got to go on an Antarctic cruise.
Yes, that was an absolute highlight, and it was one of those things. I was, you know, still quite young, and I was interested in lots of things, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to work on the Southern Ocean now because I definitely want to go on a cruise. And I managed to get on a cruise, which was really fantastic because we went right up to the ice shelf, to the edge. We were sampling krill and plankton along the ice shelf, so we would work all through the night, and you just have this lovely community spirit on board, and we were next to icebergs and albatrosses. It was one of the most amazing experiences. Really nice.
I am now insanely jealous.
I won't tell you about the orcas and the whales.
Oh, no. So you were born in South Africa.
Yes.
And you did most of your university education in South Africa, and then you came to Australia.
Yes.
What was the cultural difference like for you?
Well, we chose Australia, obviously, because it has quite a small cultural difference, and also because we like the weather here and a number of other things. Mm-hmm. But the cultural difference, I guess it wasn't as great at CSIRO because we employ a lot of international people. So probably about half of the scientists are international, so we have quite a mixed bag of people. But in terms of the actual sort of Aussie culture, I think the challenging thing was some of the subtle differences. And one of the classic one that illustrates it is my daughter came home from school and she said she'd got into trouble because she hadn't done her homework. So I said, well, why didn't you do the homework? And she said, the teacher said it would be nice if you did this. And in South Africa, the teacher would say, you must do this. And South Africans slip up all the time saying, you must do X or Y. And then we're seen as being very rude and blunt. And there are things like that that you learn over time, that there are different ways I need to ask my team to help with tasks on projects and things like that. So there are a few things you learn. The barbecues were great because they were just like our braais back home, and the sporting culture is similar to South Africa. Sport is just huge, the outdoor lifestyle. I think the other big one, though, was just the the greater sort of uptake of technological devices at that stage. So my children had never had TV, phones, Wii's, iPads, any of that. And it was a complete shock coming into a culture where they didn't just run around barefoot playing. They had to kind of tick themselves up to keep up with the other children. So there were a few things like that which were a bit challenging.
I bet they adapted quickly, though.
Oh, they did, yes. Yes, they did. No, but generally, we've loved living here, and I guess just feeling safe has been really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not worrying about my children. And even, funnily enough, because in Africa, we did spend a lot of time in the bush. Sometimes when I'm walking and it's getting late, it suddenly dawns on me I don't have to worry about leopards or lions. It's quite safe, apart from the snakes, but they're similar to South Africa.
Snakes, spiders, drop bears.
There we go, yes. Yes, and I've certainly enjoyed learning about drop bears and all the other terrors of Australia. I do like the Australian culture and sense of humour, I must say. We've slotted right into that.
Very nice. Now, what would you like to... And so the terrible question that you get asked at every interview, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Well, this is the fantastic thing about my job, is that I really hope I get to keep doing what I'm doing, which is interesting research on, you know, a number of systems around Australia. So I have, I have some projects I'd like to do. I love doing what's called ecosystem modeling. Mm-hmm. I have a project called MICE. That's what I call my pet project. MICE are models of intermediate complexity for ecosystem assessments. So they're models that we use to try to look at all the ecosystem interactions in marine systems. And that's to sort of expand around our current fisheries models and look at some of the broader ecosystem interactions that are important to consider as well. And there's an increasing sort of uptake of these models into some of the management. And that's one of the areas I'm really interested in and would like to grow that area of my research. An example is with forage fish, so sardines and anchovy, which are used in a wide range of sort of aquaculture feeds and pet feeds and so on as fish meal. But the populations of those have been overfished around the world, and at the same time, they're really important for predators like whales and seabirds, dolphins, well, not so much dolphins, but a range of fish and things in the ecosystem. And so when people harvest those, we need to have an idea of how many to leave for the other predators in the system. And that's the kind of research that I'm interested in doing more of, sort of looking at the broader ecosystem.
And the foundational species and how it affects if you take too much of them out.
That's right. Yes, exactly. So, yep, just interested in continuing and building on some of the research I do. I love working with the teams that I work with at CSIRO. We work with very multidisciplinary teams, which is a bit different to when I was at the university. We worked in, you know, smaller, more focused teams or more on your own. At CSIRO, if we get a new project up, we're able to say, I need an economist, I need a social scientist, you know, I need a geneticist, and you put all the people together in a team,
mm-hmm.
and that allows us to just work on bigger projects and tackle sort of more interesting projects that can probably have a bigger impact. So for me, that's really exciting to be able to be working as part of teams like that, and I hope that I can keep that up in the next few years.
My thanks once again to Dr. Plagani for taking the time to chat. I'm extremely jealous of the places that her work has taken her. Antarctica, Torres Strait, everything in between, south coast of South Africa. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. Just remember, if you know of a woman in the science, technology, engineering, maths and medicine fields who you think would be a good match for this podcast, then shoot me a message at james@angrybeanie.com. Oh, and one more thing. If you really like this project or some of the others that I've done in the past, you can help support it by contributing to the Angry Beanie Patreon. That's at patreon.com/angrybeanie. Okay, enough of the sales pitch. Until next time, I'll see you around.